Next Step 487, October 5th, 2017. Living in the aftermath of the shooting in Las Vegas, dealing with issues of massacres, mass murders, right on our streets. That's what we'll be talking about today. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the psychological, and everything in between. This is The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our 10th year of broadcasting The Next Step. The Next Step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, as providing an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life. Based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. You don't have to check your brain in at the door to follow Armadoxy. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
I always am fearful of leaning backwards because people will automatically say you're living in some other world. But there's a song that was written by Bob Dylan, very popular folk song. It was recorded by many, many artists through the years. Blowing in the Wind. And there's this phrase in there, just hit me this week, like literally like a cannonball. It's the question, how many times must a cannonball fly before they're forever banned? Yeah, we're sitting here in the aftermath of a massacre. And this massacre is not in Armenia. It's not in some third world country. It's right here in America. Right here in Las Vegas. Where things like this should not happen. Civilized world, right? First world country. Not third world. First world country. And, well, you know what happened, Las Vegas. Gunman gets up on the 30-something floor of a casino, breaks open the windows, and starts shooting. Just shooting on a mass group of people huddled to enjoy themselves, to enjoy an evening of music, fellowship. Just starts shooting. And At the end of all the shooting, after 10 minutes, 50 are dead, 500 plus are injured in hospitals, and people asking, why? Why? And I don't know. I hope you can understand my hesitation in starting off today's show with a quote from somebody from 50, 60 years ago. Basically, today unheard of, right? Bob Dylan writes a song, Blowing in the Wind. How many times must a cannonball fly before they're forever banned? How many times do these things need to happen before we start waking up and saying we can't continue like this? And you know what? It's the same formula. What is that? Insanity, right? Doing the same thing and expecting different results? People getting shot? And then we appeal to the politicians, change the laws, we tell them. And then there's the debate, and we bring in politicians. We bring in clergy, basically to stand around and be the ornaments, to lead the people, to console the people. Beautiful, yes, absolutely. Consolation, holding hands, to share. And in that way, yes, they are ornaments, right? They bring some beauty to an otherwise very, very, very ugly situation. But is there something more that clergy can do? It's certainly the question that I ask of myself. Is it enough to just pray and say that, okay, this horrific event took place, and we'll pray, we'll remember them? Or is there something more that we can do? In other words, can we break that cycle of insanity? Can we do something different? Can we appeal to something different? Can we talk about something different? Is there a solution? Is it possible that politicians can't solve this? And we need to start appealing to the heart. Now, that's a conversation nobody wants to have, right? Because then it means that we have to get into spirituality. It means that we have to look into the soul. We have to appeal to something that people are uncomfortable talking about, namely that we are more than skin and bones. We are more than the physical, that we have emotions, that we cry, we break down, and something is wrong in the system if we can't do that. Something is wrong when there's carnage like this. It means we have to accept that what we're doing is not right. I mean, how many years of just shoot 'em up movies do we watch until life has no meaning? Hey, you know, I've grown up here. I've seen them. I've watched them. I've gone to theaters. I've paid money for them, right? You go in, a guy just buys off these huge weapons, then just goes out and blows off people. And we see limbs and we see bodies being thrown around the screen. And all of a sudden, you know what? We're desensitized. And you talk about that, and, you know, people politicize it. Oh, don't talk about that, but people need to talk about it. We need to talk about a bigger conversation than the politics and just saying, go out there and say a prayer. I hope you can understand where I'm coming from. Those of you who've been listening to The Next Step know that this is exactly what The Next Step is about. I hope you can understand that what I've been teaching for the past several years, that we who have suffered, we who have gone through massacres, need to be the first people, the first responders in situations like this. Because you see, I hate to say this. In fact, I was so incensed, appalled, by the President of the United States, who went out to Puerto Rico last week to meet with survivors of the hurricane. And he basically looked at them and he said, well, you know, it's not as bad as you think. Look what happened in Katrina. How many hundred people were killed? You only had like 16, 17 people killed. What is that all about? But he said it, you know, he said it on a world stage. He said it with cameras looking at you. And so, in a sense, I have to ask a bigger question. Mass murder in Las Vegas. What about mass murder throughout the world right now? Our dear friend Gabriel is reporting right out of Darfur, reporting out of Chad. And what's the difference? Well, the difference is that these are people that look like us, right? These are not people in Africa. These are people right here in a civilized country. So you expect a little bit more. But you know what? This is what we've been teaching, that life is life. I heard right after the Las Vegas massacre, Jimmy Kimmel made this very passionate speech in his monologue on the opening the following evening. Let's see, we'll make a note over here, put it on our show notes, because I happened to watch it on YouTube afterwards. It was very, very moving. And he talks about the fathers without sons, the mothers without daughters, and he gets choked up. Well, you know, the kids that are dying in Darfur, the kids that are dying in Syria, the refugee problems throughout the world, they have parents. They have parents who are trying to reconcile the insensitivity or the complete lack of meaning, purpose, the complete chaos in which they find themselves in. Yes, life is life. Doesn't matter where you're at. It's all life. And everyone gets hurt when they have a loss like this. And you don't need to compare. You don't need to bring down people. You don't need to say one is more horrific than the other. Every loss of life is a loss. It's a ending of God's creation. And this is that language that I'm talking about. We need to start talking about. We can't fear talking about this. It's the insanity that we need to, that cycle of insanity that we need to break. Talking about these things, these matters as social problems that are rectified by legal solutions. In other words, by legislative solutions, by we going to the politicians. Yes, obviously, there's something wrong. Legally, there's something wrong with the laws that are out there. If some guy could go out there and buy this many weapons, what did he have within the last year? He bought 30 of these semi-automatics. He bought these clips that made these semi-automatics into automatic weapons. Yes, there is something wrong with that, right? After the second gun, shouldn't somebody say, hey, buddy, what do you need this much power for? After the fifth gun? How about after the tenth gun? Does somebody need to say, hey, wait a minute, hold it. There's some bells going off right now. After the 15th gun? How about after the 20th weapon that this man buys? Shouldn't at that point somebody say, okay, this guy's building up an arsenal. And here it is at 30 guns. Here it is bringing it into a hotel. Here it is room service coming into that hotel, seeing all this stuff. And then, you know, the bigger questions come up. Well, what about our privacy? What about our privacy? Don't we have the right to have what we want? Well, I forgot who said it. It was just, it was one of the big tech giants, I think from Oracle. He says, we've lost privacy. Get over it. It's so true, isn't it? Privacy's gone, basically. Anybody could turn on your phone from anywhere, right? Check in on you. Your cameras all over the place. Basically, privacy is a non-issue at this point. And at what point do you start saying that the good of the common community, the common defense, promote the general welfare, as we talk about in our Constitution? At what point are those things important more than my privacy issues? It's difficult. These are social ethical issues. The new ethics we are in the 21st century. Listen to this, okay? Yesterday was 10-4 day. Yeah, what is 10-4? It's October 4th. The 10th month, the 4th day, 10-4. It also happens to be the way highway patrolmen, policemen end a conversation, 10-4. 10-4. And so on that day, traditionally, here in Los Angeles, they would have a parade called the Highway Patrol Parade. And I was fortunate enough to go to one a few years ago. They don't have them anymore. And yesterday I did some little Google search here and there to find out. And I think 2012 or 13 was the last year they had it. They used to parade right down Hollywood Boulevard over here. And my son Sevan and I went a few years back. In fact, we made a video of it. I'll see if it's available. We'll put it in today's show notes, okay? But very interesting, Highway Patrol. It was one of my favorite shows as a kid. I want to play for you just the beginning, which completely, totally, by coincidence, just this morning, it was on the air. Yes, the reruns are on regularly, but this morning, this particular episode was on. Just listen to how it starts off, okay?
criminal is dangerous. But most dangerous of all is the criminal whose only motive is hate. The one who will sacrifice his own life to take another. His unorthodox planning creates the most deadly type of crime. Such a man was Jay Dederich.
Did you catch that? From the 1950s, this is a series that played in the 1950s. It's 60 years old. What does the guy say? The criminal that is motivated by hate. Where he doesn't care what happens to himself as long as he can get his revenge. He can destroy something else. Did you catch the word that he used back in the 1950s? Did you catch the word that he used? The unorthodox means. Interesting, huh? Unorthodox means are used in hatred. Does this like flow right into what we were talking about last week? Do you make the connections? Can you connect the dots? You know that discussion I had with you last week about hell, about the unorthodoxy, about where there is no love, where love doesn't exist. Do you see how it flows? Hatred is the motivating factor. And in that hatred, all bets are down. It's deadly. It's deadly because you don't know how the plan. There is no planning. It's unorthodox planning. Anyway, completely by chance that this morning, this is what was on local television. Now, here's the question. Is it possible that if we go unorthodox in our solution, in other words, let's stop relying on people who can't help us. Let's start passing along the information about love, about the power of love. Listen to the things that happened in the aftermath. If you follow the news, the stories that's coming out of Las Vegas, it's a very interesting. They're talking about unexpected heroes. I heard about this man who happened to have served in the military during the Iraqi war. I forgot the first one, the second one, whatever. But he was there at the concert when he heard these shots being fired. He said, at first I thought it was fireworks. And then slowly he started looking around and figured out that somebody's shooting. So he starts helping people, and they go to behind the stage, and he said they had basically were doing some on-the-spot triage, you know, what can you do, you're right. And he says, we're still hearing the firing going on over there. And he says, I looked across the street, and I saw some trucks, and taking a chance that I might go there and find some keys in the trucks. He says, that's what I did. I went across the street. He found keys in a truck and he stole the truck. Yes, stole, I'm using, because legally that's what it is. He stole the truck. He brought it over. He filled it up with 15 or was it 16 individuals and drove them to a hospital. And the correspondent who was interviewing him said, how did you get there? You know, did the people let you go through traffic? What happened? He says, well, when you've got like 16 people screaming in the back and hand gestures, he says, traffic, we'd get to a red light and people would see us and they'd just let us through. And he took those people to a hospital. Hero, unexpected hero. And of course, he took the car back, the truck back, and gave the keys to the owner. Unexpected heroes that were popping up here and there, helping, reaching out. We're seeing love at its best, right? People doing the right thing. And it didn't matter which religious persuasion. Remember what I tell you about love. It's like the name of love is Jesus. Nerses Shnorali. Remember the bigger principle, the way, the truth, and the life. Do you see how it all fits into armodoxy? So we're witnessing people rising to the occasion, going beyond their humanity in a sense, right? Doing those super feats, doing those things of helping people. I heard of one woman, she was next to a guy, didn't know the guy, except knew that he was in grave danger because he was losing blood. He was shot up and everything, and actually stood next to him and didn't let go. Held his hand all the way to the hospital. And when they asked him why, he says, I couldn't let go. He was a human being. He was a person. He was in hurting. I just couldn't let him be alone at that time, at his hour of need. What motivates somebody to do something like that if not the power of love? Not the politics, not the laws. Okay? It's that inner understanding of what's right and what's wrong and rising to the occasion. Finding that divinity that's within inside of you to be able to do those superhuman feats of putting yourself to one side, of denying yourself so that you can help someone else, loving someone and caring for somebody. At these points of tragedy, we're seeing that more and more. And that should tell us more and more that people have it within them. We just need to tap into that portion of it, right? Instead of feeding the portion of hatred, let's feed that portion of love. So we're seeing people rising to the occasion. We're seeing unusual things. How about survivor guilt? Have you heard of that? I happen to know about this. We'd studied it, of course, in school, but I had known it firsthand. Having grown up in families where conversations about genocide came out, and there was this survivor guilt, like, why did I survive and somebody else didn't? You may think it's unusual until you're right in the situation, but it's that randomness of life. It's like, deep down you say that I prayed to God and I was spared, but deep down you know the other person also prayed to God, right? You were spared and he or she wasn't. Deep down you know it. It wasn't a question that their faith was less than yours. And survivor guilt is along that same line. You know, it's basically a random shot that was shot out. And that bullet hit your friend, hit your spouse, didn't hit you. And there's that guilt of having to live afterwards. You see this more survivor guilt, you find it more in say, perhaps accidents that were caused by one person or another. And one person survives. But certainly in this situation, we're hearing about it. There's several interviews that have been done over the past few days. We're talking about trauma. Trauma that's going to be carried on in these people's lives throughout the rest of their lives. They're not going to get over it. Hearing the firing of the weapons, even if they didn't see a bullet, they heard it. And it just, deep down psychologically, it hits you, it plays with you, and it makes it very difficult to move forward. And here's a whole group of people that will have to deal with that trauma, including all of us who watched it, whether it was on television, on the internet, on a newspaper, in a magazine. It's traumatic events, the randomness of life, and it touches us. And now we are changed too. That trauma is something that we're going to see more and more people talking about it, being exposed to it firsthand. You need to talk about it. You need to get over it. And so these new questions now come up. The why. Isn't that interesting? They still don't have a motive at this time that I'm recording this. They don't have a motive why the guy did it. But it's interesting that we look for that, right? It's not enough that we say that, you know, it happened. We want to know why it happened. Why is that? Why is that? Why do we need to know? They say it's more of a Western tradition to look for the why. In the East, it's just basically it's happened. But in the Western tradition, more legalist, more logic because of Greek logic. I don't know. But that question comes up. Why? It doesn't change anything. The reality is that it happens. But and I'll even go one step forward. It doesn't change future events, knowing that, right? Because we've known the whys of past events, and these things keep coming. But they certainly are questions that are being asked. So in the aftermath of all of this shooting, massacre, the word massacre now being accepted. Yeah, that's the other point. Yeah, thank you. Absolutely. When we were kids, as an Armenian, I knew what the word massacre meant. That was something that you just understood. Today, now, basically, it's part of our vocabulary, right? Because we see it. Because it's now accepted, yes. Guy takes out. And you look at it, you look at the senselessness of these massacres. Some guy has a machine that shoots out bullets. It's this small little piece of lead that's going out there, destroying people's organs, destroying people's lives, and then that trauma, and it destroys it forever, right? Destroyed. And with that, we ask the questions, why? The songwriter writes, how long are we going to endure this? I'm going to go to that song. Yes, I have to. It's my way of answering today. Okay, I'm going to share with you. Actually, I had many versions of it. Many, many different people have recorded it. I'm going to go right to the basic first one. This is Bob Dylan.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Yes, and how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Yes, and how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Bob Dylan doing the original, Blowing in the Wind. How many times, he asks. The answer is blowing in the wind. Does that mean we ever find out? Does it mean that we don't find out? I guess that's the beauty of poetry. He doesn't have to answer it himself. Anyway, a song that I just felt that I needed to play today, on this day, a couple days removed from the carnage, removed from the massacre that we saw in Las Vegas. It's interesting because I've talked about this in the past too. You hear these horrific stories. You hear about these news items, and it's very interesting how quickly people move over to items that would be relatively insignificant compared to these things, but have the weight, are on the same scale as these things. It always just interests me how quickly we are able to go from one thing to the next. And probably that's what's defining our age, the age in which we live in, that we do not have opportunities to process. We don't have opportunities to take what has been given to us and really process them the way they should be. And so it's sort of like patchwork. It's sort of like putting on little Band-Aids. The wound is still underneath that Band-Aid, and you're hoping that it doesn't get festered and it doesn't get dirty. But the biggest hope is, of course, you hope it heals. But many times the scab comes over it, and then underneath there's still stuff festering. And I think that's what's happening with us with things like this. We talk about these massacres, these large-scale killings, and illogically. You know, it's not in the case of war. It's not like there's some enemy. It's just some guy, a random guy gets out there and he starts shooting up people in the randomness of life. And so you talk about that and you get all your resources there, and people, politicians get on their soapbox and they talk about gun control, and others talk about no gun control. In fact, we have basic rights to bear arms. We have rights to speak. We have rights to do this and that and so on. And then more and more argument, it gets debated until the next one happens. And then it's like almost like a group of people, a group of actors who've been invited to play out these roles, okay? So somebody gets shot, and if it's more than three or four people, we'll identify that as a mass shooting, as a mass killing. At that point, there's XYZ. These politicians need to be brought in to say how horrific it was. You need to bring the president in to say that the prayers of the nation are with you. You need to bring in the churchmen so that those prayers can be organized and offered. And meanwhile, there's people that are hurting, people that are traumatized, and the world is going on with these people out of whack, needing a chiropractor of the soul, right? They're just out of whack. It's just not happening. And we go through these motions over and over and over again. I have to tell you that I feel pretty good that we have been consistent in this message. And I thank you as listeners to always bring us back to what the importance of this ministry has always been. It's to realize that, you know, you can't just be reactive to the world, but you need to be consistent. And that consistency is what the article of faith is all about. You can't just change it every now and then. This is what is probably my biggest frustration with anything that's clerical, that's in the church, is that you have to minister to people who have gone along with the ride, as well as people who are just freshly coming in. People who are looking for a magical incantation, so to speak, right? They're looking for something that's just going to cure it. It's going to be that Band-Aid. And what we're saying is that Armadoxy is really a little bit more than that. It's a faith that has sustained a group of people against, that has sustained and nourished, I should say, a group of people against exactly what we saw, the carnage, and against massacres, genocide. And now we have an opportunity to lean on this incredible faith. That is a faith about hope, about believing in a God that's outside of you, inside of you. And the more you peer inside, you understand how that God inside of you affects the outside world. And the more you peer into the outside, you understand how that God on the outside affects your life and the inside. And once you understand that, you make the connection that, yes, God is all around. And that's that equilibrium point, you know? Gases, right? They always find their equilibrium. Think of the spirit in that as that gaseous state that is seeking its equilibrium. The pressures and everything around you and it finds it, and it becomes mellow. It becomes peaceful. And that's what we need to attain, is that equilibrium point. You know, a couple days ago, we had a clergy conference, and we were talking about the priesthood. And there were many, many people who spoke and offered their words. Mine was about the psychological components that affect us as priests. And, you know, obviously not too many people got it. It's okay, you know, we have to just keep talking. But I want to share with you, because I know you will get it. There is a psychological component that makes it very difficult as a priest to be able to do your ministry. And that comes from very basic things of being able to reconcile ideas. And one of the biggest ideas is this problem of evil. Many times people have come up to me, well, what's wrong? What's wrong? It's not a question of what's wrong. It's like, you're called to make sense out of this. And that's an incredible responsibility. People don't understand that. You go to a family that has had a loss, unexplicable loss, and you have to somehow be that person that makes sense out of it. People look at you, hey, how come you're not laughing? How come you're smiling? You don't know where that person's been. You don't know where that priest has been. People don't understand that there's a lot of disappointment. And this is what I tried to share with clergy brothers, but kind of went over. I have my ideas of why it went over. But anyway, let me share it with you, my next step listeners. I mean, because it's very interesting that we are impacted. We are impacted by our environment, and certainly the priest who tries to make sense out of things is impacted by his environment. For instance, people don't understand that the priest, there's a lot of disappointment. Disappointment in finding church pews, for instance, empty, when the night before there was a huge church dinner dance and, you know, the place was full. In fact, I made this rather crude observation to the priest that how many of us have started off our services with the first hymn, Chorut Chorin, to three people. One is this old lady sitting in the front row. One is the candle swindler. And one is this guy who's walking around with his hands in his pocket. And then he's gone because he figured out that he came in through the wrong door. I mean, there's a genuine disappointment there because you know you have a good product. You know you have that product. It's a good product. It's God. It's the divine liturgy. It's the celebration of the Eucharist. And when people aren't there, it's a reflection on who? On you, it must be, right? But I would say the biggest frustration, the biggest problem, and especially, and this touches really the identity of a priest, it touches to this whole psychological effects upon the priest, is this idea of that you are a priest, you are a man of God, and therefore you should have some answers that we are not privy to, in particular in responding to evil. I'll talk for myself, and I know for many priests, and I would venture to say for all priests, one of the hardest parts of the ministry is the answer to evil. Why do these bad things happen? And the answer to these questions, such as, why that person and not the other person? Didn't they both pray? Was one's God more powerful than the other, that one survived and the other didn't? And the answer that people expect. And this is why I feel very comfortable saying that, you know, the Armodoxy response, what we've been talking about for years, is not something that is reactive to what's happened today, but is something that has been developing, that we're understanding, especially when you look at Armodoxy, how it developed it through a response to genocide, not as an eye for an eye, not a gun for a gun, but basically an answer of love. And understanding that that love endures and carries beyond the grave. that there is a finite reality that we exist in. At some point, everybody closes his eyes. What can you do during that portion of life that will reflect the goodness and the love that is inside of you? And I'd feel very comfortable in that we haven't been reactive, but we've been talking about it consistently, that God is not a Superman. God does not come out of heaven and just take the bullets for you because you've prayed. God doesn't come out there and stop the shooter, doesn't hit him on the head and say, hey, stop it, because he's a Superman. No, God is more than that. God is love. And the compassion and the understanding that we are expressing towards one another, we are reaching out towards one another, is a reflection of God. So can we escalate that? Can we make that into the points of our worship? Rather than worshiping objects, worshiping that beautiful expression of love. I am going to put a mark in it right there. I've got to be honest with you. This one really took a lot out of me. We're going to be starting a project in Armenia next week. I want to share that with you coming up in a few minutes. Let Susie make her announcement. I'll be back with you in a couple moments, okay?
Thanks, Father Vazquez. Hi, this is Susie once again to thank you for your heartfelt prayers and support for this ministry. We are now in the 10th year of producing shows, which are heard around 6 continents. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazquez calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. Thank you to all of you for your prayers, your thoughtfulness, and your support. So where does your support go? Well, it helps with these podcasts, definitely. It pays for the piano we have to rent. It pays the piano player's salary. You know, the guy who has to haul in his piano every week. But beyond that, it buys the equipment, it buys the bandwidth, it buys the space on somebody's computer, on the servers, it gets it out. Yeah, that's a bunch of electronic stuff that we just love to talk about, and more we love to play with, right? Okay, that's the fun stuff. What does it do, some of the other things? Did you notice that we're talking on a different microphone? We're getting microphones ready because we're going to be taking the portable unit with us to Armenia. We're going to be in Armenia there, and this is another portion of our ministry, especially in His Shoes, walking in the shoes of others. There's a project that we started, if you remember, a few months ago. I shared with you about the Starkey Foundation in Minnesota and how they were going to be offering hearing aids. So In His Shoes will be there. We will be on the ground floor 3 days in Armenia, where they're going to be fitting 600 people. So that would be 1,200 ears, okay? 1,200 ears with these hearing devices, these hearing aids that will restore or give them very close to perfect hearing. I mean, it's remarkable. I've seen people who've been affected. I've seen pictures and getting ready for the emotional time of our life where we're going to be there and seeing these people get fitted. So Susan and I are going to be going out to Armenia. We're going to be at the Hamalid in Yerevan. They're busing 14 buses from Gyumri. People coming in. Now, these were all people that were fitted a few months ago. You remember I talked about it back then. This is, they're receiving it. And then, of course, Starkey Foundation, the beauty of the foundation is 4 phases, and it continues. It goes beyond just this just the fitting. It goes on and it becomes a sustainable means for people to the operation becomes sustainable through different businesses and different partnerships that they establish. So it's really fantastic. I'm very excited that we're part of it, that we'll be walking in the shoes and sharing. And I'm looking forward to broadcasting from Armenia. That's why we're testing the portable equipment so we can get it to you. And Susie looks at me with her smile. She knows that she's up for some extra work this next couple weeks. But we're looking forward to getting that news out to you. Of course, Yvette is in Germany. That's another portion of our ministry, working with refugees. I'm going to be going and meeting with some refugees in Armenia. You know, Armenia is one of those countries that has opened up to the Syrian refugees. Yvette is working right on the front lines with refugees in Germany. And I invite you to check out her blog. She's put in one installment so far, but there will be more coming. It's just right now a physical problem of getting those blogs written. And she's enduring quite a bit. And so I need you to pray for her as well. She is in Germany. She needs all of our prayers, all of our support, and we're looking forward to her blog as it comes. That too will be on the In His Shoes website. But there, on today's show notes, do check it out. I'll have a link to her first blog. You don't want to miss it. It's very action filled. It expresses the love of God in some very, very difficult times. It's basically walking in the shoes of others. So you say, well, I'm donating. Where does it go? Then it goes to a lot of different places, a lot of different projects, and we're happy to provide more information about these projects in the next few weeks. We will have a newsletter that'll be coming out. And of course, the next step and all the usual places that you get your information, whether it's on Facebook, on Instagram, follow us on Twitter, all kinds of places where we are walking in the shoes of others. I'm going to call it a day for today. I need your prayers, extra prayers for the world, for what we find ourselves in, for the love of God, for the love to be manifest through our actions. I want to invite you to all the usual spaces where you find us, and most importantly on inhisshoes.org. For the wonderful team who put today's show together for us, for Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath cut out.
Epostle.net, apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe.